Hey, this is Channing.
And this is Leah.
And you've reached Vessel, Art is a Doorway.
Welcome to episode 2.
We definitely would like to welcome you to episode 2 of Vessel, Art is a Doorway. If this is your first time listening into this podcast, we want to thank you so much for giving us a portion of your time today. On today's interview, we're going to be releasing an interview that we had with the artist Eric Joyner.
Yeah, it was a real treat having that conversation with Eric, especially after we'd had a conversation with Thomas Storson. Thomas Storson's interview is on episode 1, by the way. And Thomas, he has acquired some of Eric Joyner's pieces, and in fact, they've become friends. And so after talking with Thomas about what he knows and how he has enjoyed living with Eric and his work, it was really nice just hearing from Eric's point of view how his work has affected others, how he approaches his work, how his work is almost, to me, it almost sounds like it kind of can send you in a different place in time just because of the nostalgia attached to it. And it's just so relatable.
One of the things looking back on this conversation that I really enjoyed was how Eric, he looks at his work and from a different perspective, and he allows people to come to their own conclusions when they actually see some of his work.
Yeah, that was really interesting about how he creates just a few components to insinuate a story, and the viewer gets to finish the story.
And audience, if you're wondering, we actually recorded this episode at Corey Helford Gallery. And I just want to apologize ahead of time. There's a lot of moving back and forth with the microphones. It's just because we don't normally have a desk like we normally do when we're recording. But you're going to hear some of that feedback. But it's an excellent interview. So without further ado, let's listen into this interview with Eric Joyner about robots and donuts. Well, audience, we have the privilege to be here with Eric Joyner, and it is an absolute privilege to meet you in person, Eric. We're at Corey Helford Gallery today, and we're recording this conversation that we're having with Eric. Eric lives in San Francisco, but he's doing a show out here in Los Angeles, and if you're in the area, I would highly recommend coming to this gallery and seeing some of his work. It is amazing. Eric, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for the intro, Channing. It's very flattering, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. You know, we just had a conversation just briefly before we hit the record button, and we found out that you and Leah, you guys are both in the same gallery in San Francisco. Well, yeah. What's the likelihood of that happening?
That's amazing. You know, a small world. I sell prints at the Art Attack in San Francisco. That's about it.
Yeah. Definitely a privilege to be in the same space with you.
Well, awesome, awesome.
Feeling is mutual, Leah.
Awesome, Eric. And, you know, we really want to thank you for giving us just a portion of your time. We know that you're a busy man. Now, we were referred to you by Thomas. We spoke to Thomas last week.
Yes, Thomas Storsund.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we hear that you guys have been friends for over a decade, right?
Yes, we have. He's a good man.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. You know, audience, what you're going to hear is a little bit about Eric, some of his background, how he comes into creating some of his work. It's more than just being about donuts and robots. There is a story behind it. And we look forward to really opening it up, especially in talking about it on this podcast. But Eric, for some of those who don't know you, could you please explain maybe like your background, where you came from? How did you get into art and things like that?
I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was always fond of drawing and painting. Actually, I didn't start painting till I was in high school. But I realized after trying to learn algebra that I definitely wanted to be an artist instead. Made that decision and when I was, a sophomore to go to art school. After art school, I got the basics, painting and drawing. So I was very traditionally trained and became an illustrator, which I did for about 15 years. But along the way, it's a horrible lifestyle being an illustrator. And so I kind of wandered into animation, and I tried that, and that's even worse than illustration. And then a few years later, I got sucked into doing a 3D movie project, and I learned texture mapping, and that was also torture. And then After that, I got into 2D backgrounds for animations. And that lasted like, I don't know, 8 months. And then the company folded. Then that was around the year 2000 where the economy fell out. And that's when I decided to become a gallery artist. And went in many different directions. And I finally settled on this one because these are the things that I like.
So do you have like a memory from your childhood, like one of your first memories of art or being attracted to it that may have influenced you or led you into the art field?
Well, I was already drawing in kindergarten, and I remember in the first grade, kids wanted me to do dragsters for them. But the thing that really opened my eyes was going to the Vincent van Gogh exhibit at the De Young when I was in the fourth grade. Mm. That was really cool. So I was really sucked in by that. I was like mesmerized, you know.
What was it about that exhibit? I know Vincent van Gogh, for me, he's one of my favorite artists, you know, in the past. What was it about the exhibit that really stood out to you?
Just the colors and the bold brush strokes.
So now, how did you get into becoming, are you a full-time artist?
Yes.
How did you, what was that transition like going from, maybe were you doing it on the side and then did you eventually evolve into becoming a full-time artist? So how did that happen?
Well, yeah, when I was working at those jobs, like doing texture mapping and animation backgrounds, I rented a cheap studio in San Francisco, in the city, and I started painting cityscapes. Then I started painting cars. You know, I got invited to these car exhibits. And then that lasted a while, but then, you know, it's boring, cars, you know. It's all there is to it. So then I went into, had this idea to do Mexican mask paintings because I went to the Day of the Dead procession and it was really inspiring. But nobody liked them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I made a list, you know, of things, 10 requirements to become an artist.
Good.
And one of the things was people have to like it, whatever it is I just decide to do. Also, I was doing... I had this idea to research old cartoons, comic strips from old newspapers that are defunct, take a panel, and then blow it up into an impressionistic painting. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody loved it, but then about the same time, I wanted to make reproductions, prints, mm-hmm. limited editions, and I knew all these characters were owned by King syndicates, so I didn't want to get sued, so I stopped.
Right, that's important.
Yeah.
So with the current donuts and robots, so you said you made a list, and then did that just automatically pop into your head, or do you remember at the what point in time you decided to settle on that subject?
Well, you know, it was a lot of experimentation with different subjects. And along the same time, I was doing these robots. And basically, the robots won. You know, and when I added the donuts in 2003, that really got a huge reaction. So I just kind of pushed that.
And so what relationship, obviously donuts are delicious, mm-hmm. but besides that, do you have like any particular memories or?
I do. You know, when I was, this is a true story. I remember foggy days in San Mateo. I'd meet my friend from across the street. I was 5 years old. And out of the fog, this truck would pull up. And it was a donut truck. And they sold donuts. My mom would give me some change to get a donut. I always liked the glaze. The glaze were the best.
So is it a thing of maybe, you know, you thinking about your mom giving you the money to get the donuts, and it's probably the excitement of getting that donut, putting it in your mouth and swallowing. Yeah.
Think maybe it was? It was like the first opportunity to be free to get out of the house, you know, on my own without supervision. So that's why I remember it so well. And plus the weather was just really foggy.
So it's almost kind of like donuts represent at that time. I'm sure it depends on which painting, but it was sort of like a freedom and kind of like a comforting, happy situation, even though it was like foggy outside.
Exactly. And, you know, meeting a friend, and there was just nothing bad happened.
You know, we noticed that, all right, so we have the donuts, we have the robots. It really seems, you know, to me, your work is fun, but there's also a certain amount of structure in the work. Friends, we're just looking around at some of these paintings. They are amazing. Now, this one is a robot, and I see some Lay's potato chips.
Specifically, Voltron.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, one of my favorites, Voltron. Okay, now for you millennials, now we don't want to talk about millennials negatively, but you probably don't know anything about Voltron. Please Google, do some research. But pretty amazing. And then what is that? Is that a chimp?
It's a big head that's floating in the canyon. And he's sucking up all these things. And Voltron, all he can do is stand there and watch it happen. He's powerless.
Captain Crunch?
Yep.
and apple pie? And
orangutan?
Yeah. All that. It's just amazing. Your creativity is really, really something that time. Now, when it comes to creativity, in this structure in your work, do you start from a subject or are you just a little bit more intuitive? How do you feel about that?
Well, I start with a kernel of an idea and I do sketches and it evolves. Sometimes I get the painting 80% finished and then I add, think of something better to do with it and I change it even more. Like this painting we're talking about was already done. And then I thought it's just boring, There's that mouth needs things going in it. So that's when I had that, that invisible force coming, emanating from there and sucking all this stuff up. Mm-hmm. It's just more interesting,
So does it start with like that initial idea? Does it start more of like a feeling or is it like a picture? Like I really like how, even though it's a really fun picture of Captain Crunch and Voltron and this robot, just that idea that Voltron, who's pretty powerful, is standing there powerless. Was that the feeling that you had when you first started it or did it begin as something else?
No, it wasn't. At first they were just, I like the idea of a narrative in a story. I think that basics for a narrative, you have to have two creatures or sentient beings, facing off. And so you can do that for a lot of art just because people look at it and they can make up their own story, What are they talking about? Why are they looking at each other?
So earlier in our discussion, you were mentioning one of your first encounters was of the Van Gogh. Now, was that one of your first encounters when it came to art?
I remember looking in National Geographic and seeing some paintings I put by Picasso, I believe. And I actually did one. I copied one. And I got so much acclaim. I got so many kudos. I didn't know who did it. I didn't know who Picasso was. And I didn't find out till many years later, But that thing went on a state tour, the museums and stuff, with other kids,
So when you think about art, design, creativity, do you feel like people like Picasso, Van Gogh, have they had an influence on your work? Or what are your thoughts about that?
They're just not some, I think maybe for color, Van Gogh. But obviously I don't paint like him that much. I think my biggest influence was the old illustrators from like 100 years ago, like N.C. Wyeth or Dean Cornwell, J.C. Leyendecker. I think the reason those guys were so good is because they were really wealthy. They got paid really well back then.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point because I think some artists kind of have mixed feelings about them being compensated for their work. And I totally agree with you. It's like, when you have more resources than most artists I know that do get paid for their work, they just put it into being more creative and making
exactly
more and better things. Now, do you feel like as far as one thing that I really love about your work is even though it's fun and kind of comical, there's still a lot of humanity. Like there's definitely like just a lot of the subject matters are still, even though they're dealing with like robots and food and things like that.
And cats.
Thank you.
They're still related to subjects that, we can all relate to as far as like the one with the robot kind of holding the cat in the snow or like the one that's behind you is like the somebody, I guess, strapped a donut on their car.
Yeah.
And is about to take it home.
In the rain, right?
Where would you say this was?
What location?
That was in San Rafael, California. Mm-hmm. I was at a back when I did, I was at a car show, but there's a cat in, I put a cat in that truck, if you noticed that.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of far, but now you say that I see the little cat peeking out. So do you take pictures?
I do, yeah.
Okay. Of a lot of is it majority of the backgrounds? Like, do you have, are they taken from your photos or is like a combination of that?
Well, I start with a photo and then I idealize it to, make it look better and I edit it.
Yeah. And so, we mentioned Thomas, he's one of your big art collectors out here in Los Angeles. Could you think back to maybe some of your first collectors when you really first started off? Can you think about any of those people? What was it like to have them acquire some of your work at that time when you first started creating?
You know who the first guy was?
Who?
The president of Nike.
Get out of here.
Yeah, back in 2003, he bought four paintings.
So what was that interaction like? Here you have the president of Nike. He's buying your work and he's probably hanging it on a wall somewhere, either his office or his home. What is that feeling like when you create that piece of work like that?
Well, it made me very proud and happy. You know, I didn't find out 2 years later he's actually an avid art collector. And it was because of that ad at La Luz de Jesus show. You know, they put a little photo in the Juxtapose magazine, and that's how he found out about me.
And so can you remember some him or one or two, a couple of your other people that have acquired your work? What are some of the reactions that you usually get from people?
Well, I don't meet very many of them. The galleries never tell me who gets stuff, but every so often I meet people and they're very, you know, they're very happy. And it makes me happy, so everything's good.
Yeah, and it's interesting because a lot of times we, in this podcast, what we like to feature is how the interaction that people have with a body of work. And also the interaction the artist has, because that term starving artist, it just needs to be wiped out. Artists should be compensated for their work.
Well, definitely, you know, but life, you know, life is very unfair. It's good, but unfair. And I find, though, that if I'm kind of unhappy, I work harder, oddly. If everything is really going good, I get lazy. You know, I just want to go on vacation. I don't want to work. That's
funny. Thomas, he talked a lot. He was talking or singing your praises really about how much he enjoyed living with your work. And that's one of the things that we like to talk about, too, is have you heard? I know you mentioned that you don't get to talk to many of the people that acquire your work. But have you talked to many people about how it is for them to live with your work?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have some collectors in Las Vegas and also in New Jersey and New York. And they just love it. There's something about it, something tangible property. And, you know, they can look at it and see, there's a brushstroke. I know what he was doing at that moment. That's what he did. You know, I think it's just the humanity of it, maybe.
In Thomas's interview, audience, if you could just go back from last week, Thomas, he described how basically he was having some work done at his house, and he actually loaned out some of your work in the interaction of some of his guests when they had to reluctantly bring it back to him. And I thought that was kind of funny, you know, because they didn't want to let go of the work.
I've done that. Yeah. People left art with me and I didn't want to give it back.
What is your home like? You know, when we think about artists and the environment that they're in, you know, what do you, you know, acquire others' work, or do you maybe have like different art objects inside of your home?
Well, usually I'll trade with close, you know, artists that I meet in my own, like if I'm in a group show, I'll make friends. And if I like the artist and we, you know, get along, then we'll trade. I buy some art sometimes. Yeah.
What are some artists that you, maybe some artists that you've actually been in group shows that you've really enjoyed recently?
I was at a group show with Robert Burden down in San Francisco. And his work is stunning, really amazing. Huge, colorful, elaborate, intricate, detailed, you name it, it's all there. He'll take like one creature, like say a bear, and he'll research the last 100 years of every bear that was made into a toy, and then he puts it in the painting. And along with patterning, a lot of from all over the world, different cultures, patterns, and he makes a very nice formal compositions. And you should check him out, Robert Burden. He's got a Instagram account, and it's Xavier. Robert Xavier Burden.
Robert Xavier Burton. Yeah, we'll definitely make sure that we put his link in the show's notes.
So how has it been? Do you find that when you trade with artists and live even with their work inside of your home, does it ever, the influence ever come out in your work as well?
No, I just have fond memories of that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I try not to get it influenced. I mean, because I remember the torture of being an art student. My first years out of school, art school, just too many influences, mm-hmm. and you don't know which way to go, and so your paintings suffer. Mm-hmm. It's better just to put blinders on, make a decision, and go with it.
We kind of touched on about how you have art, and at times you're able to exchange artwork. Can you think about maybe some of the first pieces that you were able to acquire in your own home even?
That's why I try not to look at too many other artists, because I want to be distinctive. I don't want to be like everybody else. But Sean Barber comes to mind. He was the first big trade. We were in a group show back in 2005, maybe. He's now a huge tattoo artist and portrait. You know, he does great oil paintings here in L.A.
So what kind of things, what is your process like? I remember you mentioning you have like the 10 things that you wrote down. So you don't necessarily go to other artists to get inspiration. You mentioned that you also take photographs and kind of like incorporate that. Do you have kind of like a formula that you follow, or does it change?
Well, when I'm painting, I do kind of a basic oil painting technique that you do on oil, like on canvas, stretch canvas with drawing. Fixed, and then I put coats of gesso on, you know, and just do the background first. Actually, I do all the kind of block in all the shadows, do the start from the farthest, most distant point, and work forward. And as you move forward, the colors get more intense, and you know, the darks get darker and the whites get whiter. So you get more, you know, comes forward. Mm-hmm. And that's a very simple idea. And also, when you do it that way, you don't have to paint the edges twice, you know. I hate painting the edges twice.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a burden. Now, when I first came in, I saw it was almost like a drawing. Is it of RTD2 and Barbie?
Yeah.
Well, the first one, actually, it seemed like it was more black and white, and then there's another colorful one right behind it. How did you do that? I mean, you know, it's a pretty amazing, like, painting, you know, or is it a drawing? I didn't get a chance to take a look at it.
The first thing was a pencil drawing, because, you know, I had to work out the problems first before I went to painting. But you've heard of Grant Wood and also American Gothic.
Yeah.
Well, I call this American Tragic.
American Tragic. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's really amazing. Now, what's going on with these guys back here? There's like a group audience. Now, there's this longer painting. When you first walk into the gallery, it's, let me count them, 11 different robots. and they look like they're being...
They're in a lineup.
Yeah, they're in a lineup.
It's like a psychedelic lineup, though.
Yeah, it's psychedelic lineup. And the colors are amazing, man. Now what is this one called?
I think it's One is Guilty. I think that's what I called it.
One is Guilty. Okay, well, One is Guilty. Yeah. You can see a lot of these guys, they've been up to a lot of mischief. You know what's funny? That third from the last one, Leah, we have that one in our home. I think we got that when we were living in the Bay Area. We used to live in San Jose, and I picked that one up. That was one of my first. I took a photograph of that one, at least one that was similar to that. And it's funny, you painted that thing. That's something. Now, so that's having an impact on me. You know, so cool. That's interesting, Eric. You know, you just have some really, really interesting work. Man, you know, we don't want to take too much of your time, but what is going on with this one right here? Is this a
pool?
Submarine?
Well, it's like an homage to David Hockney. David Hockney, the British artist. That painting that he did, the same thing, just sold for like $100 million.
Wow.
So, but that's not why I painted it. But anyways, so I just switched out the people for the Creature of the Black Lagoon and Robbie the Robot. But I tried to mimic his brushstrokes exactly, and it was really hard. It took a long time.
So what medium do you like to work with? Do you prefer oils or acrylic or
oil?
Oil on canvas, yeah. Do you paint indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
Indoors, okay.
I have a very elaborate setup so that I can keep my hands steady, getting out of the paint, like a bar that comes down, and I have like a little rail at the top, and then I have a shelf at the bottom to rest the art on, and different levels. I like good art ergonomics.
Good ergonomics. You know, that's so good. Really, you know, artists taking care of themselves, good ergonomics is so important.
Yep.
You know, not really talking too much about my work, but I'm a ceramist, and I've been working in a studio with another, I would call her like a master ceramist. And she's been teaching me good ergonomics. And I can just see a difference when I'm throwing at the wheel and I'm having good ergonomics. Like you said, I can actually stand up a lot better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps me get more precise detail. You know, if I have good ergonomics, my wrist isn't hurting or my back's not hurting. And you know, I just don't like to suffer that much.
And so with your pieces, it sounds like you have like a pretty good, you know, process that you follow to to take your ideas and make them a reality. Do you have like an average time that it takes you to work on a piece, or it just kind of depends? Do you work on multiple paintings at once?
Well, I do. I work maybe three or four at a time, you know, not all the time, but a lot of times, especially as the deadline's creeping up, then they start, I put like three or four on my easel. The easel is like 14 feet long. Also, you know, I don't have a wife and kids. I don't have any responsibilities, so I can go work day and night, and that's how I crank it out. I have a very limited social life, so I can, you know, really put a lot of time into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely can tell the quality is impeccable.
Thanks.
Yeah. And you know, I want to really commend you, because earlier in the interview, you made a statement. You said when things get rough, you just work harder.
That's true.
And I love that. I really love that. You know, that really says something about you as a person. Good hard work as an artist. How do you think good, you know, performing or creating good content has an impact on the work that you have?
Well, I think hard work is good for a number of reasons. It makes you stop thinking about your impending doom. Mm. And also, I don't think anybody's going to help me. I don't depend on the government or anybody. And I just think, nobody cares. I mean, I hate to say that, but so that's why I work so hard.
So with your paintings, like you talked about how your process where you may work on multiples at once, for instance, like in this show, do you tend, because you're working on so many at once, do you have like a particular theme that you tend to have, like either emotional, feeling wise or subject wise?
I start off with one idea, but they change. I'm kind of wishy-washy when I mean, that's why I have to set parameters of robots and donuts, right? And I'd say, at least I got that. But it tends to go crazy, and I get into different worlds and different ideas, and I start adding new characters. So I don't, you know, if you really want to have a really hard, hard and fast rule for a theme for a show, I think the show's going to be boring. And I think variety is the spice, you know, and also I just, I don't know, that's just the way I operate.
You know, in wrapping up the interview, we know that we're here at Corey Helford Gallery, downtown Los Angeles. Are there any upcoming events that you'd like our audience to know about that you're going to be participating in?
I'm going to be at Comic-Con, and in May, I have my personal art studio is going to be open to the public.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know the exact date yet, but it'll be in May. And if you go to shipyardartist.com, you can find out later. I work in an art colony, and there's about 200 artists there. It's an old naval shipyard.
Awesome, awesome. And we'll definitely put that in the show note, both of those links. And Eric, we just want to say thank you so much for participating in this podcast. You're an excellent individual, not only just a hard worker, but an excellent man. And I'm glad to have gotten the opportunity to meet you. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
It's been my pleasure, really. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. It was definitely a treat. And just for the audience, we're going to put it in the information, but where is that? Is that shipyard in San Francisco? Okay. All right.
You know, I would say that if you really want to follow me, the only thing I tend to update is Facebook. I have a Facebook fan page. I think it's called Robots and Donuts or something. Or if you go to ericjoyner.com, the links are all at the bottom for Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, audience, you'll probably go to his Facebook and his Instagram and you'll get hungry. Trust me. Well, you see all the donuts. Once again, thank you so much, Eric.
That was such a great interview with Eric. I really enjoyed talking to him and seeing his work and how, even though he may not draw people or paint people in his paintings, it still represents our humanity.
Yeah, that was so interesting hearing how he made a reference to how he remembers
buying donuts as a child and how that experience was. It really was symbolic of the freedom that he experienced as a child.
And he also mentioned his influence with the masters. And even though his work does not necessarily look exactly like a Picasso or anything like that, you can really tell in the care that he puts into his pieces, especially when you see it in person. It's just the quality is really outstanding.
Thank you so much for listening into Eric's interview. And we can't wait for you to listen into the next episode with Ted Meyer. Now, when you think about art being in a hospital, a lot of times you think about how the art helps the patients. But actually, with this interview, it's going to be something different. Ted Meyer, he uses the art to actually influence the doctors in their profession. So we really cannot wait for you to listen into that interview. But for now, thank you so much for your time. And thank you for being a part of Vessel, Art is a Doorway.